koe. Malo lele, whakalofalahi atu, and welcome to the Well with Anahila show. My name is Sally Ikinofo, and I'm your host for today. Standing in for Labour List MP, Anahila Kanongata'a Suisuiki, based in Papakura. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Lewisa Waugh, a dual New Zealand international sports star in netball and rugby, a sitting member of Parliament, and a current member of the Northern Stars netball team. Today we are here to talk netball, about the season, what's happening with the game, and what to expect from our netball players. Welcome, Lewisa, and thank you for making time to come on the Well for Anahila show.
Tēnā koe, Sally, and it's awesome that you are covering for our mates, because I knew she was going to be busy today, and I just want to say in her absence, happy birthday to Anahila.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's right. Yeah. We are finally getting into the netball season, and this is a great opportunity to hear about what's coming up for the season and how things will look post-COVID. How awesome is it for New Zealand to be the first country in the world to showcase women's sports during COVID, which is still pretty much alive in the world? How do you think, Lewisa?
Oh, look, I'm pretty excited, like a lot of netballers, that we've been able to create a competition that will enable 45 games to be played over the next 10 weeks. We've obviously seen the first of those games played this weekend, and I have to say the Pulse are looking incredibly sharp, given most of the girls have been, you know, training in isolation. They've had about 4 weeks to come together before the beginning of the season, but they absolutely hammered my team, which is the Stars, based out here in South Auckland last night. And having the previous Silver Fern captain, Katrina Rode, and now the current New Zealand captain, Amelia Round Ekenasio, they are really the team to beat, and they have set the competition alight. And from a Stars perspective and a South Auckland perspective, we played the Tactics tonight, which should be hopefully a bit closer. But to be honest, we've got a couple of front runners already, and they are the Pulse and the Mystics. So I, like many others, have been hanging out for some live sport. Also managed to watch some rugby over the weekend too. And the Blues are looking quite good, just quietly. But no, it's wonderful to see women's sport with our men's sport, and particularly through our Super Aotearoa competition at the moment on TV, because we all know, especially those of us who are passionate about sport, how important sport is for, you know, community development, social cohesion. We all love backing our team against other teams, and so it's very exciting that our six teams, the Pulse, the Mystics, the Magic, the Tactics, the Stars and the Steel, have now to play one another and prepare like we always do for greater competition opportunities from a national perspective at some stage in the future.
Great. Now, since there is no longer a Trans-Tasman competition between New Zealand and Australia, has that affected the performance of our players?
Oh, I think up until last year's World Cup, a lot of people would have said yes, absolutely. But the reality is we managed to get an amazing coach in Dame Nolene Taurua, who was able to combine players together to create a team that was able to beat the Australians. So, you know, since 2016, we haven't had the opportunity of that Trans-Tasman competition, and we've had to go it alone. And I think for many people, we were quite desperate, actually, because of our performance at the last Commonwealth Games and leading into the World Championship last year. But what we do know is we do have the players. We have the skills, which means our competition is fit for purpose. I know at the time a lot of people thought it was a backward step, because it had taken a lot to get that competition, that Trans-Tasman competition, up and running in the first place. And it really did provide an opportunity for our women athletes, our professionals, to be paid, which, you know, when I was playing, that was a dream. That wasn't even a reality. and to have lost that and for each country to go alone, I think was a bit devastating for everybody. But what we now know is that we have the competition that can produce world champions, which is exactly what we did last year. And if we look ahead, we've got the Comm Games, which will be over in Birmingham. And then we have the next NEPA World Cup in Cape Town in South Africa. So the fact that our girls now have this opportunity, and as you've highlighted, Sally, based on COVID being a reality here in New Zealand and globally, the fact that we have women's sport able to be played is something that we should be proud of. And I have enjoyed the first few games, and I look forward to further games as we progress through the competition. And looking at the players, they are fit, they're focused, and I think that work ethic that has been brought by new coach Taurua will set us up well for the next Comm Games, and I think to, for the first time, be able to win a successive Netball World Championships.
And it's great to see Knowles using her, supporting the coaches of our new competition on TV last night. It was great to see her sharing her knowledge and experience. Now, is the sport of netball getting enough exposure on TV?
Oh, I think in the current climate, absolutely we are. I mean, I think it's pretty phenomenal that we're only, you know, a week out from when Super Rugby started, which shows the priority for Sky. But it also means that Netball New Zealand, with Rugby New Zealand, were, you know, working hard with the players and the franchises to get a competition that not only we could advertise, and obviously people are allowed to now go to those games and watch live, but providing, I think, the stability and being able to move on quite quickly from the lockdown and kind of a situation where nobody knew what was going to happen, to actually create a competition for the next 10 weeks. I think it's something that netball should be proud of. For me, you know, the women's sport and the primary women's sport in New Zealand is netball. The women's rugby competition will start in August on the 22nd. And so, again, if you look at those two sports, and along with rugby league and the Warriors, and we now know that there will be a women's competition sort of at the end of the men's competition, which will enable the women to play their finals in line with the men's finals, means that of the three codes that we as a country prioritise in this season, so rugby, netball and rugby league, we're going to have women's equivalents also represented. And so when I think about women's sport, I actually think that we've in some ways stopped being an afterthought. I think that we are at the forefront at the moment, and Sport New Zealand and obviously the government and Minister Robertson have been really clear that the promotion of women's sport, the allocation of resources to women's sport is incredibly important. So as a country, I think we should be really proud of how we are ensuring equity, actually, within the context of sport for our women.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And the girls looked amazing. I watched some of the games too in the weekend, and it was like they hadn't been, they looked as if they just picked up from where they left off before the lockdown, so that's great. Now, are there any rising stars you can identify who are playing particularly well after the couple of games that we've had in the weekend?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a little bit biased because I just look at that Pulse team, and they're just, like, honestly, who's their goal shoot? I know I'm think the goal shoot for the Pulse and the goal shoot for the Mystics, actually, two young women. And I can't remember their names off the top of my head. But I think...
Dunn?
That's right. Yep, Dunn, plays for the Pulse.
That's right.
And then the young girl who plays for the Mystics, who's being fed by that Toyava girl, the wing attack.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I just think that Niue I think is her name. I think both of those players are destined for the Silver Ferns, and it will just be about their ability to, I think, meet Nolene's standards. I read that she was very clear that to make her team you had to be incredibly fit, and they used to have the beep tests in the good old days, and you know, she set some standards about the beep test, and if you didn't qualify based on the level that she'd set, then she wasn't even going to look at you. And so I think by creating those expectations of the players, you will see those young ones come to the fore. And so combinations I always find really interesting when we're looking at certain individuals, because sometimes it's actually about who they play with and who's the best feeder for them. But those two in particular, and when I think about, just now Katrina Rure kind of dominating in that midcourt at wing defence, there's been, you know, opportunities for other players to take up the spots that she had historically played in that GD space. But yeah, for me, they're the ones to watch. And from a Stars perspective, I'm obviously very keen that Maya Wilson continue on the development pathway that she started in England earlier this year. She was outstanding. And I think when you look at the girls now, I mean, they're finely tuned athletes, and it takes a lot of hard work and dedication to get your body into a space where, you know, you look like you're rearing for action. And I think what you saw, particularly with the Pulse, is that they've been hungry to play, and they've been training so hard that the opportunity of the competition, they just, you know, they were hungry, and it showed. And so, and also, they're not going to show any mercy. They're going to hammer it away. And I think we used to, when I was playing and when Lynn Parker was our New Zealand coach, I mean, I was one of the newer members of the team, but the team always was set kind of objectives at the quarters to enable some of the young ones to come on. And so we had to be ahead by a certain number of goals to then give other people an opportunity. And I think that's what we'll see happen, particularly with teams like the Pulse, is that they will hammer away to give opportunities for others, because you can train and train and train, but there's nothing like playing to kind of hone your skills and prepare you for competition. So it's all very exciting. And if I was a young netballer right now, my aspiration would be to make the Silver Ferns and very clearly to win a Commonwealth gold in the next Netball World Championships.
Yeah, and I think it's looking good. We've got a lot of depth in the young ones coming through, and the culture that Noel has introduced to the players, it's just amazing. That showed in the build-up to the World Championships last year, which is great. And Toyaba's bullet passes into the shooters was just amazing. I mean, she picked it up off her toes, I think, one pass, and went straight into the shooter. And I thought, my gosh, the opposition didn't even have time to position themselves in a place where they could defend the ball. But anyway, it's just awesome to be watching netball and rugby, of course, at this time while we're still going through the COVID-19. Now, I think you may have mentioned that, are we getting, my question was, are we getting sufficient funding from the government? And I think you've probably already answered that. But I guess we could always do with more money.
I mean, the reality of the situation is that every national sporting organisation is now going through a process of reassessing their finances, because a lot of the sponsors are now not in the positions they were before. And so there's a lot of money that has been lost from the system that then would provide sporting organisations with the resources they need. And what we do know is the government prioritised $4.4 million to enable these professional competitions, and of that, netball got $2.2 million. And so it got the bulk of the resources. And from an equity perspective, I think that's what a lot of us are looking at now. If we're prioritising X amount of money for sport, we want to make sure that half of that money goes to women's sport, and so netball obviously getting half of that allocation meant that they were able to meet in some regards the loss of revenue through sponsors now not being in a position to support the codes. But it's also meant that, you know, the NPC competition for the women, the Whare Palmer Cup, is able to proceed with all of the unions participating, because there was a threat that they may have to limit the number of teams and reduce the length of the competition, but they haven't done that. And I think there is, at the moment, a concerted effort to make sure that any investment in the sports space also provides opportunities for women. I think that the government can rightly take some credit in leading that change in philosophy, that change in priority. And what we do know of our women athletes is that we are very good, and we have been bringing home the bacon, so to speak, because look at our women's sevens team are just outstanding. And in fact, many countries look to them just generally as the best sevens team in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you think that our women's sports teams are getting the same acknowledgement and recognition as the All Blacks?
Oh, absolutely. If you've seen in the last few years, we've obviously had Kendra Coxedge actually win the overall New Zealand Rugby Player of the Year. She was the Women's Player of the Year, but she qualified for the overall accolade, and she won, you know, Rugby Player of the Year. We've seen the Black Men's Sevens win at the Rugby Awards and also at the Helberg Awards. And again, you know, I think, the Silver Ferns were recognised at this year's Helberg for Team of the Year, but the reality is I think we're now not taking for granted the fact that our women are such wonderful athletes. I think that they are getting those recognitions. And actually, we may beat, and often are, our men's equivalents, because, you know, the global competition in women's sport is just lifted substantially. The English really started it when they hosted the London Olympics, because there was a huge investment from their government in sport and women's sport. And I think because of that investment, yes, I think the value between a gold medal won by our men's teams or our women's teams are now of equal value. They're not seen as lesser. And in fact, our sportswomen, and I think of the Valerie Adams of this world, the Lisa Carringtons of this world, I mean, they're untouchable. They're incredible athletes and sports people, and they also are women and amazing role models for our next generation of athletes coming through. But they also inspire young people, like, per se, not just young girls, but I know young boys are inspired, and I've heard stories with Kendra that, you know, there are young boys who look up to her and how she plays the game of rugby. And that's actually what we want, an ability for our young people to be inspired, no matter the gender of our athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the men's netball? The women practiced against the men before they went to the World Championships last year. Do you think that helped them?
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, our men's netball team played a huge part in preparing our women for the intensity of the competition. Obviously the physicality, but also just pushing our girls into being stronger, playing smarter, being more competitive. I thought that series that was played before they departed, it was wonderful for netball, but it was also a fantastic acknowledgement of our men's netball players and the competitions that they obviously have nationally. There's always been some resistance at an international level. I know there was an aspiration for netball to become kind of an Olympic sport, and in fact when I first got in the Silver Ferns in 1991, we went over to Karlsruhe in Germany, and we played over there as part of, it was called the World Games, and it was a showcasing of sport that had aspiration to go to the Olympics. But you will see when rugby got into the Olympics, it wasn't just men's rugby, it was women's rugby as well. And so I credit the Olympic movement for actually pushing for equity and equality in sport. And the whole reason women's rugby was included was because the Olympic kind of philosophy is that it has to be both genders. You can't just promote one gender over the other, or a sport that is more aligned with one gender or the other. And I think that remains the challenge for world netball. There's still a lot of resistance to being a dual gender sport, and whether or not that's valid, I think in some parts of the world they're saying it is, because if they end up, you know, allowing men to play, that there's a I guess a reluctance to allow that to happen, because the threat is that there'll be more of a focus on the men playing netball than the women, and in continents like Africa, for example. So I know that there are deep kind of conversations happening and philosophies, and whether or not netball should just be a sport at that international level, at a World Cup level for women, remains one of those debatable topics. And I haven't been involved in them from a, you know, national and international governance perspective, but it's wonderful to see that we here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, have men play. And we value them, and they have been part of preparing our Silver Ferns to go off and win world championships in places like Liverpool.
Yeah, and I think it's great that we're leading the charge on this one as well, profiling the men's and getting them up to be recognised internationally. So what are you looking forward to with this netball season, with the change of the competition and the...
Oh, for me, it's just being able to watch, and actually, as you've highlighted, Sally, to look at the continued progress of some players, to look at the emergence of others, to know that actually we have the depth of talent and the coaching to take us forward. I mean, I'm really excited that Nolene is committed to taking us forward for the next couple of years. I mean, I honestly do believe that we could do a repeat and win the World Cup in Cape Town, which we've never done before. I mean, it's always been a long time between drinks for us, every 16 years, which when you think about it is horrific when the alternative is Australia wins everything. But obviously the defending champions for the Com gold is England. So it's an exciting international scene at the moment, and our Caribbean teams are making a bit of a comeback. I know South Africa actually have tried to incentivise the players. They were one of the only countries who had prize money, and they were going to reward their women if they'd actually won the competition. So I think in that professional space, there's a lot more interest in netball and the opportunities for women as sportswomen and as athletes. And so for me, this is kind of where it all begins. And it is for us the ANZ Premiership. When I was young, it used to be, you know, getting in the age group rep teams and then going to the national tournament. But that competition we won't have this year because of COVID, and so we've really focused on the ANZ Premiership and working with ANZ, obviously, and other franchise sponsors to provide this opportunity. So as I said, 45 games in 10 weeks, and we'll all get a pretty intense period to be able to watch and enjoy netball.
Yeah, that's great. Now, how do you... I think we've got the coach and the players to be able to win the next championship. So I think we're doing well there. Now, we're just about to wrap up. So how do you keep well, Louisa? What are your hobbies and plans for a holiday in New Zealand or local tourism?
Oh, well, that's a good question at the moment, actually, Sally, because I've had a bit of a bad run, to be quite frank. I had tore my meniscus in my knee, I had to have an operation in November, and 5 weeks ago I had sinus surgery. So if I sound a bit nasally, it's not because I've got a cold, but I'm recovering from surgery. So I've been in the wars a little bit, but I jump on the bike every day, and my sister-in-law Dora challenged me to highlight the issues of post-traumatic stress disorder. And a lot of people were doing the press-up challenge. Well, I conducted it into the 25 minutes on the bike challenge. And so I've just finished day 11. And so for me, I need to be active. To be well, I need my body to be in a good position. So that's what I've been trying to do. And when Anahila and I are down in Wellington, I try and say to her, I'll meet you in the gym tomorrow morning at 6:30, and it doesn't always work. But I, you know, I've made this commitment. So for every day for the last 11 days, I've been in the gym, and for the next, 14 days I will be, because I will make sure that I fulfil this commitment to doing these 25 minutes for 25 days. But you really have to make time, and you have to prioritise yourself, and you have to understand that there's a link between physical health and mental health, and both of them are really important. So the mental aspects, I actually did a meditation course and a mindfulness course last year, because there's always stress in whatever job you have, and you have to be able to let it go, and let it go in a positive way. Because the alternatives are you end up being short-tempered and, you know, things that you should be able to deal with. And the reality of our job, things happen all the time, and we have to be able to deal with those and deal with the public and the public's expectations. And sometimes people are cross. It's interesting at the moment, just the whole, there's a bit of an environment where people are a little bit anxious and, you know, not really sure about what's going on. So we have to have a lot of, I think, empathy for one another and be able to understand what's happening. Because, you know, this COVID context has meant that for many of us, we are a bit scared. We're a bit scared about what's happening, the implications of what could happen if we got it for ourselves and for the people that we love, and particularly for older people, because we know they're our issues if you're an older person and you get it. So yeah. I think just being aware of all of that and having really good friends that you can talk to, and actually being able to speak about things you're passionate about. So I really want to say thank you for allowing me to talk about one of my passions, which is nickel. I made the silver fence when I was 17 because I loved it. I used to get up at, you know, all hours of the morning and be practicing my goals until midnight some nights, and my father would have to tell me to get inside. But I think it's these passions that actually help us to just shift our thinking away from work and into that space of pleasure. And it's those pleasures in life that I think we all need to get us through these times. So. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Louisa, for making time to come on Anahila's Wealth with Anahila show today. And I hope you recover fairly quickly, and wish you all the best for the future. And this is that's us for today. And this is Sally Ikinofo, your host, standing in for Labour List MP Anahila. And we wish you all the very best for the future. Thank you for going lahi.
Kia ora, and it's well with Sally on your days, I reckon. So, ka pai, Sally.
Thank you, Louisa.